Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Steve Quayle, Dave Flynn, my guest. Stephen, David had alluded earlier about the group of people, as he called it, and David joined me here on this, a group of people that I have always believed to be higher than most world governments. Do you think that there's an organization out there like that, you, Stephen Quayle, that knows about some of the things you two are talking about right now?
Well, absolutely, George. Over the last 25 years of investigating and talking to these guys that have had either religious conversions or have had a question of conscience clearing, and having talked to people who have been murdered over this issue, like the late Phil Schneider, etc., I think most people can't really imagine that there is a group of powerful individuals that are more than aware of ancient history, that are more than aware of what we are talking about, Dave and I are talking about, and have actually entered into the most base agreement with what would classically be called demons and alien spirits. And when I say demons, I'm talking about disembodied spirits. Now, to a lot of people, that sounds too remote. But again, I refer to the X-Files movie, not because I'm trying to, you know, just wear out the point, but in that, as I have been told, as I have interviewed dozens of people that have come out of the spook world, the world of black projects, meaning secret projects, absolute scientific technology that's 100 years in advance of where we're told it is, they absolutely allude to it, and some of them are terrified. I have seen men who are bigger than big, tougher than tough, weep like little babies when they talk about the genetic experiments they've seen. They talk casually about the speed of some of the new flying ships that we have that absolutely defy modern understandings of physics. So I absolutely am convinced that they exist, and I believe that they are in cahoots with the same group, if you will, of fallen angels on one extreme that are going to bring about the ultimate battle, which is Armageddon.
Fallen angels. You believe fallen angels may have come from Mars, not the typical angels that we have all been known to believe.
Huh? Well, the word angel means messenger, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the classic Renaissance presentation of angels is far from accurate, you know, or are the little cherubs, the little wings that people put on their whatever mantles or whatever. The thing is that we're talking about biblically, we're talking about historically and mythically, beings of great strength, great wisdom, rebelling against the God, at least in the Christian and Jewish faith. And then we're talking even in mythology that you always have the head deity, and he's having to punish the rebellious under deities, and that's a mythological presentation throughout history. So I can only share this, that when we're talking about cataclysms, when we're talking about the end of days, not the end of life, but the end of this present age, and when we're talking about all these events, and as you, George, and Art have interviewed literally, what, thousands of people mm-hmm. in the UFO field, you know, we're seeing too many correlations and corresponding stories to say this is just everybody eating ice cream and pickles. And then when you get into the ancient realm and you see what Richard Hoagland has done in Mars and what David has done in Mars, again, Richard's got his aspect of it, David's got his aspect, but when you start to put it together, it paints almost the most unbelievable tapestry, yet you see science fiction alluding to it. And just so you know, I've been told by guys who came out of this world that you'd be surprised the people who are the head science fiction producers historically and even presently that have ties with, I would say, the group, and let's just call them the group.
Your take on the group, David Flynn?
Well, when we were talking about Pythagoras and his symbol, the five-pointed star, modern illuminated fraternities at this day say that their father is Pythagoras. And the secret societies that have surrounded that core, if I can use it sort of a pun,
yeah,
that is propagated to this day. That they hold the body of information intact. They don't pass it on until they find somebody who's elite. And theurgistically speaking, they have to fit into all the patterns that have demonstrated that there's something about that person that connects them with the higher forms of life that are out in space. Now, I'm talking about a rebellious angel influence, which is the core of what the Old Testament is talking about. There's something about certain people and their connection with the heavens. Steve was also talking about compiling information from different places, and that reminds me of the conference that's coming up in Wisconsin.
On the 25th, right?
Yeah, and I thought maybe I better say something about that before time goes on. It's called the God-Man-ET Conference. It'll be in Kenosha, Wisconsin at the university there, and I guess now it's sold out, but you can still benefit from this, I think, truly historic event. You can pre-order the videotapes of the lectures and the discussions. The lineup is great. Richard Hoagland is there, Hugh Ross, Paul Nelson, Mike Heiser, and I. And you can do that through the link on my site or Richard Hoagland's enterprisemission.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can call, if you don't have a computer, 1-800-350-4639.
Do you and Richard see eye to eye on Cydonia?
Well, I haven't had a chance to really, you know, work out the brass tacks on exactly everything that he believes and I believe in common.
Well, I think you both believe in the main issue, and the main issue is that there are indeed structures on the planet.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, it's such a wide open topic. You can study it. That's what the conference is about too, because we're breaking new ground. These things have to be looked at critically. And the Christian community has to look at it critically, too, because I think it is a hugely important aspect to their future.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Why does the Christian community have to look at it differently?
Well, there's this thing called eschatology in theology, and it's the idea of the science of what is coming. And in eschatology, we believe that there was a first advent of a Messiah, and that there'll be a second advent of a Messiah. And around that second coming, there's a lot of events that are not too pleasant. And one of them is a cataclysm for the earth, which we were talking about before, that the flood was a cataclysm. There seems to be a lot of extraterrestrial influence on this earth right now, along the lines of instructing people about a cataclysm that's coming.
Could it be Yellowstone blowing up?
That could be, very well could be a part of it, but I think it'll be a kind of a plethora of things. I think there'll be more than one thing happening at the same time.
And when you say same time, like within what period? Like within weeks of each other?
Within years, I think.
Okay.
And that's part of what my book is about. That's part of why I put my website up, because first I was tackling the issue of ufology. And about 10 years ago, there really wasn't much of a field of ufology. In this last summer, things have really picked up. In fact, in Roswell, for the first time, there was a biblical ufology conference, which is where Richard Hoagland and I met and Mike Heiser met. And that was at the UFO resistance headquarters, I guess. But what happened was there were people from the Christian community who came and actually talked about what UFOs are. They didn't say, we don't believe in them. They said, we do. Now we got to figure out how they fit into the future and how they fit into the past.
Well, and as you know, Hugh Ross, and he will tell you this when you're with him, believes that they are not physical, that they are demonic.
That can be debated.
Well, you know, George.
Yeah, you're.
Let me step into
sure.
that, because here's the thing, that, and I would say I agree with Hugh in one respect, but the demons are disembodied spirits. The whole point of the genetic alteration of humanity is to prepare bodies for the disembodied spirits to once again inhabit. And the thing that what most people don't understand is the spiritual obviously can manifest itself in the physical. The Bible says the things that are made out of things that aren't seen. So I would say this, that, and I'm not disagreeing with David, but the point that has to be made is that we're talking about spiritual entities that physically can manifest themselves. In the Old Testament, you have angels showing up before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. You have angels showing up to wrestle, with Jacob. You have angels, you know, and I'm talking about beings that have physicality, that can eat, that can speak, that can physically move, but then they can also go into the spiritual realm. In the evil fallen angel realm, you have the same thing, except you have something different there. You have now, where before the fallen angels, I'm talking literal, those who used to inhabit the heavens, meaning the planets, the stars, whatever, coming to earth, and only a third of those angels rebelled. But the point is now what they were doing in the old days, in antiquity, they're now doing genetically through genetic alterations. And I think that's where Hugh Ross is right on, because you have a spiritual component to this thing that cannot be explained away in just the standard Anunnaki. Because when you look at Sitchin's viewpoint, you got to say then, who made the Anunnaki?
Well, also the word demon is a descriptive term also in the Greek. It just means divine being. And there's ranks of these things, too. And there's also in demonology the idea that demons are just the disembodied rebel angel that had a human body actually created for it by its interaction with human women. And so when they were destroyed in the flood, these disembodied spirits were left on this plane without a body, which is why they always are seeking some vessel to fill. But there's still rebel angels in the universe that haven't actually transgressed in this manner, and they have a sort of a spiritual body that they can actually manifest in. And so it gets down to semantics and then some history, and you know, can get kind of touchy. But I think that he's right in a great sense, because every manifestation you see of the UFO phenomena will fit into the medieval and the Renaissance descriptions that you see.
Mm-hmm.
Demonic activity.
Do you believe, David, that the biblical flood, the one that involved Noah, was done on this planet, or, as far-fetched as it sounds, was it done on Mars, as a few people think?
It's not so far-fetched. I think that it happened on both worlds. I think that there's a commonality between the flood on both worlds, because what caused it was a planet that exploded. And that's where Richard Hoagland's Tides of Mars comes in, this idea that Mars was a moon of this planet that exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a theory of Thomas Van Flandern, who talks about how there was a planet at one point where the asteroid belt exists now. And about maybe 150 years ago, that was a consensus among astronomers.
Might this have also been the so-called Planet X, which of course didn't come rolling around in May or June like some had predicted, but it could be a Planet X that is in our solar system, and every once in a while when it comes around, it creates all kinds of havoc.
Well, it goes into the myth of Krypton or Astra. In the Bible, it's actually called Rahab. And that's not to be confused with Rahab from Jericho. It's a different actual spelling. But there is a consistent explanation in the Old Testament of a celestial object that was shattered by God because of the inhabitants' rebellion on the planet.
Well, what about the object that astronomers now say crashed into Earth not once but twice, and that's what made our moon?
There's a legend in Tiwanaku in Peru that's actually been brought out of a calendar there that says that at a time before the flood, which they've actually estimated at 13,000 years ago, the present moon that we know now wasn't in existence. There were two moons orbiting the Earth at such a high frequency that they would eclipse the sun like 37 times a year. But their orbits were decaying, and they fell into the Earth, and this is a predicted thing. But the time that these moons were in existence, there was also the race of gods, like we were talking about, on the Earth, and they built Tiwanaku, this incredible megalithic site, to withstand the flood. And it was built in the same manner that all the other megalithic sites on the Earth were built to somehow exist after the flood and project somehow in the future to men that there was a civilization that was more advanced than the one that is presently. And so there is evidence on the Earth that talks about a celestial sort of environment that's different than ours right now. And I think that if you look at the future and the events that are explained, at least when it comes to apocalyptic literature, there has to be some sort of gravitational body that moves close to the Earth for some of these things to be pulled off. The prophecies of the Earth wobbling and being knocked off its axis or knocked off its orbit. These things can have a astronomical explanation as well as a supernatural explanation. I think both of them work in concert.
Now, these moons that you said might have crashed into the planet Earth, they couldn't have been that big.
No, they're supposed to be small, and what happens when they move close enough to the Earth, they exceed the Roche limit, and they fragment and then just shower into the Earth. But before they do that, they pull an incredible tidal bulge out, say, maybe mm-hmm. a mile. And while the Earth is rotating underneath it at 1,000 miles an hour under the equator, it washes clean everything in the tropical zone. And as soon as the planet, the moon would fragment, the gravitational force would go away, and, of course, the tidal bulge would propagate outwards toward the poles, carrying all the detritus that had wiped clean off the tropic, and then finally the temperate zones up into the poles. And, in fact, if you go back geologically and look at the boundary between the Holocene, which we live in now, and the Pleistocene, you can find incredible amount of Pleistocene flora and fauna deposited at the poles of the Earth.
Now, how did the ancients know about some of these things, David? I mean, how did they know, unless they were told?
That's what I believe. I believe they actually were connecting with these beings. In the 4th century A.D., there was a group of people who were Neoplatonists and Neopythagoreans. They were probably the epitome of theurgists. From history. They were the people who had really pinned down how you communicate with these extraterrestrial beings, these higher forces. They could avail themselves of a library that had been in existence for 600 years at the time, the Alexandria Library. And at the same time, too, they had the Old Testament, the Hebrew text, translated into Greek, so they could really pin down what the nature of these things were. Legend goes that they were able to call down the effects of these things through creating patterns on the ground, which is exactly what the megalithic system on this Earth is. They were able to communicate without language. They were able to communicate mostly with systems of numbers and geometry, which is beyond nationality, beyond language. It's mathematics. It's what you would communicate in if your mind was as advanced as the Bible explains an angel is. So there were people who communicated regularly in history. These people didn't just go away. Their information was propagated into the future. There are people now who actually understand what it is these people knew. And it's a secret group of people, though. This information wasn't supposed to be for everybody. It's designed, though, at some time in the near future, to become more popular, to become a household understanding, and that's going to change everything.
All right, let's find out when. We'll be right back. We'll open up phone lines, give you an opportunity to talk to Stephen or David, and I tell you what, when you address your question, address it either to Steve or to Dave. And I'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.